Welcome back, everybody, to the Get Fit podcast series. I am your host, Andy Gallardo, and we are excited to relaunch this series with our good friend, Brett Klicka, author, speaker, presenter, life coach, trainer, and consultant to Kaiser Permanente for a number of years now. Brett has a new book out titled Energy 100, Your Journey from Exhausted to Energized, and he is here today to share some insights from the book, along with some other valuable life lessons. Before we get started, a couple of quick disclaimers. This information is not intended to replace your healthcare professional. Opinions of hosts and guests do not represent the views or opinions of Kaiser Foundation Health Plan, Kaiser Foundation Hospitals, or Southern California Permanente Medical Group. Neither KFHP, KFH, or SCPMG receive any compensation for products or services mentioned on the show, nor do they endorse or promote any products mentioned. With that, enjoy the show. All right. We are here today with Brett Klicka. Brett, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Andy.
It has been a while. I have in front of me a book called Energy 100 and a companion journal. Tell me, you know, how did this book come about and how long have you been working on it?
So I've always liked to write. I'm an expressive person. I can't draw a stick figure. I can't sing. So writing is my form of expression. When things are going well, I like to write to kind of sort, you know, what's going on in my mind. When things aren't going well, I like to write to really sort out what's going on in my mind. In 2022, it was a Sunday morning in San Diego, and my mom was down visiting, and my wife was going to go golfing with some friends from her organization, and I was going to go mountain biking after I finished some content I was creating for a upcoming speaking thing. And so, it came time, Lisa was leaving, going out the door, and she came over and said, "Well, bye, babe. I'll see you later. I love you." And it was one of those things where I was working, yeah, and I was deep in work and I'm just trying to get this done. But something in me said, "Hey, you know, don't just give her the head nods. Yeah, I love you. Get up, go give her a hug and a kiss and tell her I love you too." And that was intentional because her and I had talked about that, because it was something that her and I both loved our careers. We were very much into our careers. Yeah. And we realized, you know, once we had my daughter, we realized time wasn't going to be something we had a lot of together. So we decided to say, "Hey, pursue your career. Let's pursue what we're passionate about, but let's commit to each other that we're going to go the extra mile," just in that sense of, "Hey, if I say I love you, let's mean it. If you give me a hug, give me a hug. If you, right, let's take those moments and just make those moments count." And that sounds, it might sound hokey to some people, but I'm telling you, that level of intention is really important in everything we do, because we're not necessarily going to have more time, but if we invest more of ourselves, then we get meaning from the moment. And that moment that I stood up from my computer and I went over and I gave her a hug and a kiss and I said, "I love you too," that was probably one of the most significant moments of my life, because when she walked out that door, I never saw her again.
Wow.
And she had a cardiac event. She collapsed on the golf course. She had completely undiagnosed, asymptomatic, extremely healthy, ran half marathons. She'd done a powerlifting meet. Just fitness was her life. So I was, after this, I have a 12-year-old daughter. I was reeling. I mean, this was something I wasn't ready for. I mean, who can be ready for anything like that? But there, right, was no intro. It's not like she got sick and then,
right,
passed. And so I hit a low point in my life by a magnitude of, you know, a million. And I got to the point where I was afraid of what this feeling could do to me.
Sure.
I really thought, I really had the question in my mind, could I die from the way I feel? Because I didn't see a tomorrow. I didn't care about a tomorrow. I knew I had to take care of my daughter, but as far as myself goes, I didn't care. And going through this process of being in the depths and allowing myself to be there completely sober and experience it viscerally, I made a decision and immediately that, and out of fear, quite frankly, that I'm not going to cover this at all with anything. I'm not going to drink any alcohol, nothing. And it was a nightmare to
yeah.
just lean into this and say, I'm going to walk through hell. But it gave me a unique perspective. Whenever you strip away all the layers like that and you're willing to just sit in the rawness of the human experience. We all love the peak, and I've experienced some peaks in my life, but this was a trough of all troughs. And through that, I developed a perspective through this process of grief. And I got to a point where it's like, I have to share this. And at first it started just, I was working with a therapist, and at first it started just, I'm writing down just what's going on in my head. I'm writing down just, this is what I'm thinking. This is what I'm feeling. These are the challenges I'm having today. Today's a good day. Today's a bad day. And I started with that. And then I started to make little notes as to kind of thoughts I had or things that became real to me or apparent to me through this raw experience. And I didn't write them as a book initially. I just was writing them as to get them out of my head.
This was for you, right? This was not for the therapist to look at.
This was for me. And it was her guidance that said, you should do this. You're an expressive person. Just write it down. Because then you have data. You can look at it. And so I started to do that. But then that was something, there was a catharsis in that. Again, because I'm an expressive person, writing is how I do that. And you know, the pen kind of attaches to this part of my brain I can't get to outside of that. And so I just started writing, I mean, almost every day.
Wow.
And at first I could barely write my name. It was amazing the weight that grief has on your mind. I couldn't read, I couldn't write because I couldn't stay focused long enough. And as soon as that started to, I started to be able to focus for longer. I started to write more. And then I started to write, instead of just getting out of my mind, I started to picture other people. And I started to think, well, if I experienced it, how could I explain what I'm feeling to someone who might be feeling the same way I am? Or how could I share something that I feel has helped me through this? How could I share this idea with someone? Because for me, the way that my mind is programmed, when something happens to me, if I can share my experience with someone and it somehow helps them, it brings that thing meaning. And I don't care if it's something great that's happened in my life that I can share someone, well, this is how I did it. And you know, this is what happened. And you can do it too. Or if it's something nightmarish that's happened in my life that I can help them get through it, it brings meaning to that. And if there is any meaning to my wife's passing, you know, people come and tell you, oh, well, you know, there's a meaning, there's a reason for all this. You know, when you're in grief, you're going through grief, that's BS. Yeah. And you just want to hit people that say, well, there's a bigger purpose here. They obviously don't get it. They're trying to help, but they don't get it. But sometimes you got to create a purpose. You have to create meaning in something. And that's really what I see in taking all these thoughts and experiences and perspectives on grief, but beyond grief too, because prior to this, my job, the way I've made a living, is helping others move through the challenges in their life. First as a sports speed and strength coach, then personal training and a sports speed coach, and then as a corporate consultant for engagement, working with thousands of leaders, thousands of teams who are coming to me, really many of them at the low point of their life. They got the 4Ds of the 40s. They're diseased, they're in debt, they're divorced, and they're afraid of death. And they're coming to me, and these are the things that are governing in their life. That's what I've done for 20 years, and now I find myself at the depth.
Yeah.
So in order to get myself out, I was like, I have to get these ideas, I have to get this experience in a way that other people could understand it, so they could understand that there is a way through. And I say, it's not a way to move on, it's a way to move forward. And that's what the book did for me, quite honestly. And that's what I intend and hope that it does for many. And it's not just people in grief. If you're experiencing grief, it's for people that feel that, if you feel you're at an impasse in your life right now, maybe you're burned out from work or from your family or something in your life. Maybe you feel you're in a midlife crisis. Maybe you're having relationship challenges that you feel that there's no way forward. That's what I created in this book was perspectives that I had gained from my experience with my own grief, but also from working with thousands of people that life had taken them down to the bottom rung. And I was able to at least give them some insight and some tools to start to move their life forward once again.
Wow. I mean, I struggled with how to even ask you about this, you know, knowing you so well for so long. And, you know, number one, I want to say thank you for sharing your work. And you've taught me long before this situation happened to you to share your work and the importance of it. And I'm glad that it is making an impact on others. And, you know, we're so lucky for you and for the work that you're doing. And, you know, you've helped me and my company and a lot of my friends. And so, you know, again, I just want to say thank you, I guess, is the thing to say. And I want to talk about the book, but I want to ask you one more quick question. When you were kind of really, after this happened and you were really kind of dealing with it, did you, and I know you've been an exercise guy your whole life, mm-hmm. did you ramp it up a bit? Did you find that it helped you more to get out and move and walk? And I think you told me like a lot of your writing comes to you when you're walking, right?
Mm-hmm. So I was in my garage gym the morning after my wife passed. And it wasn't to get a workout. It was, I have trained for years. I've trained some really good habits. I've trained some really bad habits too, yeah. like anybody. But exercise is something that has helped me make sense of what I'm going through. And it didn't matter if you know, I was an overweight little kid, kind of got bullied and things like that. And when I found exercise, I was like, hey, this is something I can go in the garage by myself and I can exercise. And that's my world when I'm in there. And then by the process of MOOM, I mean, just the mechanics of exercise, there's research and what it does to our brains, what it does to our bodies, obviously. But it was more the agency of knowing that I had this thing that I had trained for so long. My brain asked for it. That morning when I hadn't slept the night before and the world, talk about a confusing place.
Yeah.
I was now walking into a life that I knew nothing about. It was like I was born again on another planet. And my brain is like, well, give me some movement and that's going to maybe help us figure this out. And so I would go for walks every day. I'd cry. I'd yell at God. I would pray. I couldn't listen to music. It was too jarring for me. But I still would go in and I didn't ramp it up. I just
stayed with it.
I just did it.
Yeah.
And this thing that had been a part of my life was still in there. My brain asked for that. And when I would give my brain that, it's not like, oh, I'd go exercise and oh my gosh, I feel amazing now. But what it did is it gave me that space to just kind of start to figure it out.
Yeah.
And I'm so thankful for that.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. You know, I didn't want that question to appear to be insensitive, but I really try to get people to understand, like, when you're really dealing with stuff, mm-hmm. move your feet.
Yeah.
You know, get outside.
Yeah.
It won't solve it.
No.
But it will calm you down in the clarity that comes with it. So
yeah.
I was just, you know, curious, because I think a natural reaction is just go sit on the couch.
That's what you feel like doing. Yeah. You feel like crawling in a hole. I've never been afraid of addiction. It's something it doesn't matter with alcohol or anything. You know, I drink alcohol or any other thing like that. I've never been afraid of addiction because my personality gets addicted to things, but it's been positive things. I don't necessarily like the way those things make me feel ultimately. So I never was like really that worried. The way I felt, as terrible as I felt and as hopeless and helpless as I felt in those depths of grief, I've never been more afraid of the notion of addiction, because I knew if I found a substance that took the edge off of that grief, I wouldn't be able to control myself. And exercise was something that, and I wouldn't even say it took the edge off it. It just made me realize I have some agency over my situation. And that's what exercise has done for me my whole life. And it's exciting that everyone has access to it. And, yeah. And the exercise that I was doing through this was literally just moving my limbs.
Yeah.
I'm not sprinting, running. I was moving my limbs. And it gave me the headspace. Moving my body allowed my mind to keep moving. Because once your body stops, your mind stops.
Yeah.
And you become a pond. And no one's going to take a drink out of a pond. And we know why. Because a pond is toxic. And so when you make your life a river and not a pond, and that doesn't just mean for physical movement. I mean, think about the way our minds work. How many people stopped learning the day they stepped out of school? How many people think they get to an age or a period of life where you stop learning? I know everything I need to know, so now I'm just going to let other people think for me. And those are the people that get obsessed with these talking heads on TV, and they end up creating more of the problem. And so when you're willing to, you know, moving your body, but move your mind and learn new things, move your beliefs. And I know that sounds crazy, but when you keep an open mind and pressure test your beliefs.
Yeah.
That's what grief did for me. It pressured. I had all these beliefs and I share these beliefs with people. Oh, life is, you got to do this and that, do that. Yeah. Well, when you drop down to the bottom rung, you find out what you're really made of. I talk about, and I share this story all the time, but if you've been to Washington, D.C., you see D.C.? You see the Constitution, right? Yep. They have the Constitution up on this pedestal. And there's a mechanism that if there's ever a big threat, nuclear war or anything, the Constitution has, I think it's 200 feet, something like that. It disappears into the core of this protective thing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so everything blows up. That's what you need to rebuild society right there. And that's really what our values are. And that's what I discovered from this as well.
Wow. You know, thanks again for sharing. And it's so difficult because I don't want to ever diminish the situation. But I do find myself, when trying to help people, like, and people think I'm like really insensitive and dumb. I'm like, you got to move.
Yeah.
Like, if you sit and think about it, to your point, that pond water, that sludge just builds and it gets darker. And so, thank you for sharing. And I know, you know, a lot of this is in your book and, you know, your book, Energy 100, it's not your typical book. It's not a sit down and read it from first page to end, right? Like, tell me how you want people to use the book.
Yeah. So I started writing a narrative book. I was going to write one thing leads to the next and it's just a big long book. And the more people I talked to and got perspective. And then for Christmas, I got a book by Ryan Holiday. It's called The Daily Dad. And it really was every day you read this paragraph of Stoic philosophy and it was really cool. And I thought, man, that's such a cool idea because so many people say, oh, Brett, you're writing a book. Well, I'm not a big reader, but you know, I'll buy your book. Well,
right.
I don't just want people to buy my book.
Right.
I want, again, it's great if people buy it, but to bring meaning selfishly for me, I wrote it so people could get meaning out of it. And so I created it day by day. So it's designed to be 100 days. It's a 100-day journey, Energy 100.
Wow.
From you start, there's body, brain, and beliefs. So there's things about your biology, how you can improve your biology, things that you can do both for your cognitive mind and your emotional mind, but also how to tune up your belief system, how to get more in touch with your belief system, get your beliefs to match your actions. And so those are alternated throughout. So every day you have a reading that takes about 5 minutes or less. So a lot of people are like, I just liked the way it read. So I just kept reading it. And you can do that too.
Right.
But it's just sort of the thing. You start your day with this perspective. Yeah, you start your day with a perspective or an idea that hopefully snowballs into action as the day goes on. And that's the way I wrote it. So even if you're not a lot of people, well, I'm not a reader, but I had somebody tell me they'd never read a book, a whole book, and they got all the way through this one. And that was just like any compliment I could get.
Yeah.
That did it. Because they hadn't read a whole book, but they said that it was something that was consumable in that short amount. It was relevant to their life. And, you know, again, selfishly, it's like, man, if I got through to that person and they've got some tools now, it brings meaning to the terrible thing that happened in my life.
Yeah. And I think to your point of people saying I'm not a reader, you know, you're hitting the number one thing that gets in the way of people's goals is that the time commitment,
yeah,
or I can't do this or I can't do that. You're literally talking about reading a page or two or three pages a day.
Yep.
And then you're done. You know, you can journal about it. You can use the companion, which I think is brilliant. But it's those little habits.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're like, okay, I got you. I got 100 of them.
It's 100. And the thing is too, if you start 100 days with perspective that's designed to help your cognitive mind work better, or your emotional system more regulated, more aware, or your biological systems more engaged. And if you start every day for 100 days, that's your first thoughts in the day.
Yeah.
That is going to create a change in behavior.
Yeah.
Because your mind, you're literally reprogramming the way your mind works. You start your day with these thoughts. Those are going to turn into actions, maybe not huge actions, but small actions that continue to build. So something as simple as reading a page a day of something that's relevant to your life, positive for your life, that's going to snowball into tremendous changes, the possibility to transform your life in a pretty short period of time.
Yeah. So, you know, so I'm curious, the name, obviously 100, now we know.
Yep.
I've known you for a long time. You've done Olympic training. You've worked with kids. You've done corporate wellness. You've done speaking. You wrote 7 Minutes to Fit. How did you land on energy?
So I started working in 2011 with, now it's Johnson & Johnson's, but it was Dr. Jim Lehrer and Dr. Jack Grobel, the Human Performance Institute.
Yeah.
And they had introduced the concept that energy is the currency of performance. Because before that, you know, Stephen Covey, which Covey stuff is awesome, but it was all about time management. Manage your time. The problem with leaving energy out of the equation is that when you manage time, you're just managing math. So if we're sitting here talking for 15 minutes, 30 minutes, hour, whatever, if we just say, well, let's talk for 30 minutes, that means nothing about anything. It means that we're going to occupy space and time for 30 minutes. But it's the energy and the focus and the intention that we bring to that conversation that creates the ROI, or that creates the output that we want, the impact that we want. And so I learned really from them that energy is your intention. You have biological energy, you have cognitive energy, and it's really, you know, physical energy is kind of how you feel.
Yeah.
Do you have the capacity? The mental energy is, well, are you engaged? Can you turn that energy towards things that are important to you? Or is it just scattered? Are you, quote, busy all the time? And then finally, you have that spiritual energy where it's, are you purpose-driven? Or do you just react to the world around you? The people, the environments, the situations. And so that's why I've become very passionate after that. That really resonated with me, because you can't manipulate time.
Yeah.
You can manipulate energy. Energy is actually extremely malleable, extremely malleable. Time is not. So if we're always going to say, well, I'd do more if I just had more time, good luck. So if everyone were to think about, and this really, you know, I explain this to people. If we have a leap year, did you get more done in that year than you've ever gotten done before? You have an extra day.
Yeah.
No. When have you gotten more done or more meaningful? When I say more done, I'm not just talking about, but meaningful things. Maybe it was you got a more meaningful conversation with a partner, or spouse, or friend, or something like that. That had very little to do with time and had everything to do with the energy that you brought to that, the intention you brought to that, the engagement you brought to that. And that's really, intention is what got me out of the depths. And that's why it was important for me to share that message so that people understand that, you know, time is an important thing, but what you bring to that time, and every single one of us has an opportunity to bring more intention and energy to the time we have. And that's really the onus and my passion. That's my mission now.
So you said something that kind of triggered me in a way, because in our organization, it's almost like a badge of honor when you meet somebody. Hey man, how's it going? How you doing? You see them in the cafeteria or walking to the office, and they say, oh, I'm so busy. Mm-hmm. So busy.
Yeah.
So busy. So busy. And, you know, if I only had more this or that or this or that.
Yep.
So is energy also about where you're wasting your energy?
Well, it's 100%. And that's really where when we lead that conversation of performance and engagement and fulfillment and happiness and all the good things, when we lead that with energy and we start to audit where that energy is going, you know, everyone says they don't have enough time.
I love that. The energy audit.
Well, but that's really what it is. Yeah. If you look at how America spends their quote free time, their non-work time, statistically, it's on our devices. We're either consuming television, some sort of streaming service, we're consuming social media, we're consuming new, we're consuming something, we're staring at a device. That is how we spend our free time to the tune of 2 to 5 hours a day. I have never in 20 years sitting down with someone had them say that in their top three most important things in their life, or top 10 most important things in their life, no one has ever listed social media, streaming services, or news. I've never seen it once, yet that's how we're spending our time. That's a disconnect between where we're putting our focus, where we're putting this intention, and what's truly important to us. And if you have that disconnect, we're always gonna be anxious and stressed and miserable. So that's why it's matching those things together and looking and saying, okay, well, if I got 5 minutes, what would be something that would make me feel better in that 5 minutes? And not just give me a dopamine hit, but something that maybe it's go for a walk. Maybe it's, okay, I only got 5 minutes with my daughter. I'm going to put the phone down and we're going to have a conversation. She would rather have that 5 minutes than 2 hours of me looking at my phone on my computer, telling her to be quiet because I can't hear the show.
Yeah.
So it's the time you got, bring the energy to the time you got, and it'll blow you away what it'll do for your life.
Oh, I love that. Like, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you hear people and they say, oh, if I just had more time, and if you were to take, hey, Joe, I'll give you an extra hour per day.
Nothing would change.
Guess what? You're going to do the same crap you've been doing.
Like, so it's interesting. You look at the data with retirement, because everyone says, well, hey, I can't wait till I retire. Once I retire and get time, this is, boy, I'm going to volunteer every day. I'm going to work out every day. I'm going to go on vacation every day. Their retirement is like, wow, you're hearing about what they intend to do. The statistics on retirement, it is highly likely, and I'm forgetting the actual numbers, but it's above 70% likelihood, you will do just what you have always done, good or bad. So if you sit and watch the news or watch social media, you'll just do more of that once you're retired.
Wow.
If you're an exerciser, or if you have habits like that, you'll probably do more of that when you retire. If you're traveling now, you'll probably do more of that when you retire. And those aren't investments of time. Those are investments of your intention, your energy. And so time is a real thing, but you'll notice that some people use it in a way that brings meaning to their life, and some people use it in a way that gives them some sort of drug hit. Wow. Yeah, and that's when you bring up that thing about busy.
Yeah.
Busy is just a drug. You might as well have a crack pipe.
Yeah.
Literally, that's what it is.
Wow. Yeah, that is just so unfortunate. You know, we have, I bump into so many retired people that are still kind of hanging on to their job a little bit. And I'm like, why aren't you fishing? Why aren't you golfing?
So with that, it's really interesting. And you probably, the same observation. People will say, oh, I'm a workaholic. I have no time to do anything else because my job takes up all my time. If that's the only thing that you're doing intentionally in your life, you think about the way jobs are set up, right? So it's, you know why you're doing your job. You're clear on the purpose for it. You know, you see what your function does to the bigger picture. There's recognition within your job.
Yeah.
There's stimulation, growth. Your brain gets to grow within right. your job. You have to learn new things. You have to solve problems. It's very stimulating to your mind. You probably have to work with other people. If I'm not creating that somewhere else in my life, my brain is going to say, let's do this job thing. Because even though I can complain about it, I can have all these negative experiences, but my brain is just going to glom on to the thing that gives it those things that create meaning in our life. Challenges, clear purpose, a service. If your job is the only thing you got in your life, you have no reason to say no. So what I tell people, if you feel your job is just taking over your life, create a reason to say no. Find something else. Take a yoga class for 30 minutes a week.
Yeah.
Do something to where it's like, oh wait, no, I have to leave this right now. And I would hope that you would find a reason to say no in your life to where you find another passion, because our jobs, it's very good to love your job and be passionate about it. I work more than most people. In America, we work more than most people in the world do. And I would hope, you know, if that comes from a place of passion, that's great. But understand that job can go away someday for many reasons. So it's important to find and create that purpose in other places in your life. But in order to create that purpose, you can't just be like, well, like when I was done with work, I'm going to find something to do. No, that's just not the way we work. Yeah. We don't find purpose that way. We have to say, I'm going to do this. And we got to do it even if we're tired. But what we find is afterwards, it energizes us. So yeah, the time thing, after I've seen it borne out, it's just,
wow,
it's not what we say it is.
You know who the happiest person is that I see every morning?
Who's that?
The retired lady that is the crossing guard at the school by my house.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is who I want to be.
Absolutely.
Because she has purpose.
Yeah.
And something she has gets something to wake up and go and do. And she is the happiest, most talkative, most safe person for the kids you will ever meet. And I'm like, that is who I want to be.
Well, and you know when she started being that person? Probably 65 years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the whole thing. It's people wait. They're going to be, well, I'll be that person or I'll do this habit. Once this happens, I'll be that person. Once this happens, I'll do this habit. We don't work like that. If you want to be that crossing guard, and I think all of us in our mind have that person that we see that's just grinning ear to ear because they're doing something. That doesn't start once you're 65. That starts now. That starts with you finding things that put the smile on your face now. That's you finding things that give you that sense of meaning now. And then retirement just becomes an extension of that.
Yeah.
You do have more time in retirement. Great. You can use that time to do these things that lit you up.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's like having barely any food and now you got a buffet of your favorite foods. But if you don't know what your favorite foods are, you just complain about food and now you got a buffet. So what? You just been complaining about food.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I'd never really thought about that. So it's definitely, something you plan for it financially. Yeah. Right. But now that having listened to you, you need to plan for it socially, mentally, physically.
And that's new.
You know what I mean? What are the things that are going to take those hits away that I used to get?
Yeah.
And, you know, in particular with physicians who get to help people all day.
Yeah.
You know, that's a rough transition. So,
Well, and to talk to that, we struggle with that because that's relatively new.
Yeah.
Life expectancy with technology, that intersection of technology and life expectancy, we're living longer. And I hear these people that we're hell bent on getting people to live to 150. I don't know if we want to do that, because we need to, just how we're trying to change the way cells age and we're doing all these different things. Hey, great technology. But if we have a bunch of purposeless people who are just going to consume more media, consume more social media, consume more politics, is that what we want in our nation?
Yeah.
Is that why we're going to extend these lives to, because we need more time?
Yeah.
That's insane to me.
Yeah.
Just more time to just complain.
Yeah. Which is a big problem in our country right now.
Well, you know who lives the most aggressive, purpose-filled lives? People whose lifespans are shortened. I have a friend who has cancer, stage 4, colorectal cancer. He has told me, he said, Brett, I would, because he owned a company all about work, 7 days a week work, and to the point where he is distancing from his family. In the 4 years that he has had the disease, he's lived 10 lives with his family. He's reconnected at a level that he didn't think was possible. He told me, Brett, I would give anything to get rid of this cancer, but I don't want to get rid of the person I've become because of it.
Yeah.
And so people are living more purposeful lives when our lives are shortened, not lengthened. That should tell us something about the importance of intention and energy.
Yeah, I think there's so much to learn. You know, you and I have talked about, you know, groups like the Challenge Athletes Foundation, you know, where they work with people that are missing limbs or from accident or disease or birth or whatnot. And they're living larger than able-bodied people. Yeah. And I'm not trying to shame those able-bodied people, but you watch them go about life in the passion, in the smiles, in the gratitude.
Yeah.
And then you just got to look at yourself like, what's my problem?
Well, and again, that's just more to the intention you bring to the moment, the energy you bring to the moment versus just the time you have available.
Yeah.
And we all have that opportunity. Unfortunately for most of us, until that time span is shortened, or at least there's the illusion of it being shortened. You know, we have a health scare or, you know, a friend, like I, you know, friend gets sick or something puts it into perspective. All of a sudden it's like, I got to start living life. I got to start doing this. Well, why do we have to have a heart attack? Why does, why does someone have to, do we love die or get sick for us to say, I'm going to live life? We all have the opportunity to live a life that is of our choosing, and people argue, well, I didn't choose to do this. Well, we can choose within that. You know, Viktor Frankl, you know, Man's Search for Meaning. If you haven't read that, that's an absolute must read, but he was in the Dachau and Auschwitz, the death camps of World War II. He's a physician, he's Jewish. Well, he was a psychotherapist. And he discovered this whole notion of having purpose, is having a reason to do something, is critical. And that's really what it all comes down to. And he found that people that in the camps that had some purpose, had some notion of why it was important they got through this, they were the ones that survived.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's, we can go so many directions with that. But you know, selfishly, I want to change topics because I'd love to ask you, for personal reasons that I know everyone else falls in the same boat, sleep.
Yeah.
Why is it so freaking hard? And so you said something that I love and I want you to explain it. You said, I think hopefully I get this right. You said be 6 after 9.
Yep.
Okay. So tell me what that means.
Yeah. So everyone struggles with sleep. 2/3 of America struggles with sleep, and that means they're getting less than 6 hours a night on a regular basis. And I thought about, you know, at the time that I started consulting with sleep as part of someone's health strategy was, you know, kind of right after my daughter was born, because I was extremely constrained to sleep. But I realized with my daughter over the years, bedtime for her meant, And all of us that have kids, or when we who remember being kids, bedtime meant, all right, turn out the lights, get away from the iPad, get away from the TV. Let's take a warm bath. I'm going to read you a story, rub your back, turn the lights down. I'm going to start talking softer, and then, you know, good night. And I realized that my wife and I were going through this process with my daughter, and she just hit the sack and she's out. Immediately we'd shut that door and be like, party time. Like, that's, you know, she's in bed. Let's watch some violence on TV. Let's have some drinks. Gee, why can't we sleep? And if you look at the recommendations for what improves sleep quantity and quality, it's just a matter of turning ourselves into babies again.
Yeah.
And having a routine. And it doesn't matter if you go to bed at, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, whatever it is, have a routine that tells your brain and body, hey, we're shutting it down. So let's go through these things and let's not crank it up. Let's not get on social media and get triggered. Let's not watch super intense stuff on TV. Let's not put drugs or food in our body that's going to interfere with that. And so I think that's just the simplest way to think about it, because we can go down rabbit holes with what's going to improve sleep. And I think 98% of it is absolute garbage. I think people have got more sleep anxiety with these. Well, you have to have this mattress and blow with this fan and drink this thing and do this. Right. And I mean, we're humans, we're supposed to sleep. And I think one of the reasons that we're struggling so much is our brains just aren't designed for this level of agitation and stimulation. Because our attention is worth so much now monetarily. Like, if someone can capture our attention, they're billionaires. If they can show that they can capture our attention, there's nothing more valuable right now. So everyone is trying to get our attention. How do you get our attention? Stimulate. So you're flashing lights and this and clickbait and rage bait and this and that. So our brain, which is, you know, hundreds of thousands, you know, 50,000 years old, whatever it is, it hasn't had to deal with that level of constant, you know, distraction. So when we go to bed, our brain's just like, ah! So if we stop and say, okay, wait a minute. My brain's been fried all day. What can I do? And just look to what you did with your kids. What would you do with your kids who's maybe been at a birthday party for 2 hours eating cake?
Yeah.
How would you get them in that 1 hour before bed to slow it down so that when they hit the sack, they can go to sleep?
Yeah.
So after 9 o'clock, be 6 years old.
I love it. And what do you do with kids? You read a book. Like, you read an actual book.
You read
paper.
A book. Yeah.
Not an iPad, not a Kindle.
Yep.
And yeah, I think that's great. I think, the detachment is what is, you know, there's so many traps. You know, I got a Garmin and I'm like, what's my sleep score?
Yeah.
And I go to my phone.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, why did I go to my phone? Because I started doing something else.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And I'm like, oh, I was trying to check the sleep.
Yeah.
You know? And then you don't sleep. And then you get stressed that you're not sleeping.
That's the catch 22 of the wearable thing. I'm for it because it started the conversation.
Yeah.
But I don't look at my Apple Sleep data. I have a Whoop band that all my clients use. I don't use it anymore because I need the data for my clients just so they become aware of it.
Right.
Those things make us aware. But if you live and die by that sleep score, it's not even real data. I hate to break it to everybody, but it's you tell that to a researcher what your sleep score is, and they'll be like, oh, cool story, bro. Like, it's not very... It's not accurate. It's not, but it starts an important conversation.
Yeah.
And it also creates awareness, and awareness is the root of all ability to change and all that.
Yeah. I'm super tempted to go back to my $29.99 Timex from Target.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Life was good back then.
It is. Well, you know, what's weird is I went to the mall the other day, and I'm not a mall person, but I went into some shop. And all of the young, they look like late high school, college age. I didn't see any wearable watches.
Oh,
they were wearing, I saw three or four of them wearing those Casio. Talking about the old school.
Old school,
and I'm sure that's like a...
The little calculators.
Yeah,
on them?
But I'm sure that's like a fashion thing.
Yeah.
But I think it's also that they're just like, I don't want to be fried all day.
I love it.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting.
It's probably retro
that.
To them and cool. But
it's retro
I love,
and cool.
But I love...
What
outcome.
It represents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So a couple more things I want to ask you about. It seems like we kind of go in these fitness phases of what's hot, what's not hot, what's hot to eat, protein, this or that. Yeah. It seems on the fitness phase right now, we've kind of backed away from resistance training again. And especially females, you know, I still talk to females like, well, I don't want to get big and bulky, you know. Tell me about the importance of resistance training and how often should it be a part of your week?
Yeah. Well, what's ironic about it is that we're seeing weights and men and women are using weights at a great rate. But what's happening is we exercise, the idea of getting our heart rate up. That's exercise to everyone. And so they'll grab the weights and it turns into aerobics with weights. With nothing's really wrong with that. But the problem is if you're going in every day and doing high intensity, you got your weights and now I'm supposed to keep my heart rate up. And now I got to pump these weights. What happens is it just kind of turns into aerobics again. You have to lighten the weights. You have to do it to where it's, you're getting a little bit of this and a little bit of that. I am a fan of, and granted there's no bad way to exercise, but I like the idea of use weights to get strong. You're going to see the greatest advantage from weights when you're looking within the guidelines, you're doing things heavy for you, challenging for you. People are afraid of that word heavy. Okay. Challenging for you to where however many reps you're doing, by the time you get to that last one, there's nothing really left in the tank.
Yeah.
That's when you're going to see the greatest increases in strength, bone density, lean muscle mass, metabolic adaptations. Now they're even seeing that lifting intense, challenging weight might change the way our cell works with blood sugar. So the glute receptors on our cells might actually become more sensitive as a result of challenging weight training. And it aerobic does have that, but not as profound. And so now for women in particular, the importance of not just holding weights and getting your heart rate up, but actually challenging yourself. Bone density is such a critical thing.
Yeah.
And with the rates of osteoporosis, osteopenia, I was a junior in college, the Snow Harder Bone Study, Bone Density Study. That was the one that kicked it. It got in Prevention Magazine and it really kicked off this idea that resistance training and impact exercise actually improved bone density. And this was huge.
Yeah.
And I was one of the practitioners. I got extra credit for being a practitioner.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
But that was with women. And that honestly is the whole thing. And it's understandable why we would think that anyone would think, oh my gosh, if I lift weights, I'm going to get big. And that's an understandable notion. But that is the number one thing standing in the way of men or women getting the advantage from weight training is worrying about getting big. Our bodies do not want, our muscles do not want to get big. A very small percentage of people are off to the races. That is a outrageously small percentage of people, like way less than 1%, that they touch a weight and their muscles just grow. If that happened as humans, just let's think evolutionarily. If I had to lift rocks to build myself a cave, and every time I lifted the rock, my muscles kept getting bigger and bigger, and resources were limited. So when I get muscles, I got to feed those muscles or I'll die. Resources really were really limited, but labor rate was high. We had to work a lot. So if every time I lifted a rock, my muscles just kept getting bigger and bigger, pretty soon I couldn't feed the village. The village couldn't feed itself because we'd just be these huge, outrageously muscular, and we would have to just do nothing but hunt to get food because we would need so many calories to keep us going. So that isn't and again, it's understandable where that notion comes from. But once you move past that notion of if I lift weights hard, I'm going to get too big, the world's your oyster when it comes to the advantages to bone density, to lean muscle mass, to self-agency and confidence. CrossFit has done so many good things for women in resistance training. People can complain about this and that with CrossFit. I get it, injuries, whatever, but it's brought so many women into the fold. And I've trained powerlifters and I go to a powerlifting meet. And like, if you're a woman trying to get into a powerlifting meet, you got to sign up right away because it's
so crowded.
Yeah. There's this niche. And I think it's so cool to see because they've moved past that.
Yeah.
And everyone's so powerlifting. They're probably huge. Yeah. There's some world champions that are huge. The average meet, these are moms. These are just people like that we see every day that have learned, don't make yourself small. It's okay to try really hard and, you know, put in some. So resistance training is the fountain of youth.
Yeah,
it really is.
I agree. And, you know, I think there's just such a misperception of if you're not dripping in sweat.
Yes.
Like it wasn't worth it.
Yeah.
You know, I think like my best weightlifting sessions, I'm not sweating at all.
Yeah.
You know, but am I sore as heck? Do I feel like I did stuff I couldn't do before?
Yeah.
And it gives you confidence in other things.
Well, it's so hard to explain. And that's the whole thing. We're such kinesthetic as humans. We're very kinesthetic. We want to feel. If I take someone through a weight training set, the type of weight training session that they're talking about to get all these advantages, your heart rate might not really go up that high. Now, there's strategies for short periods of time. We do some weight training, gets our heart rate up. But if that's just all we do, you're not getting all the benefits. Again, no such thing as bad exercise. But I'm just not a fan of constant, just go as fast as you can, just whatever, sacrifice everything to get your heart rate up. Because I haven't seen true transformational benefits from that mindset. I just haven't.
Yeah.
I've seen 30-day challenges. I've seen people who've kept gyms and chains alive, but I haven't seen it do a whole lot for them.
Yeah.
So again, there's no bad exercise, but I think there's some real advantages to setting your mind and getting really strong.
Yeah. You know, the reason I bring it up is within our organization, we do a lot of body composition analysis.
Yeah.
And with rare exception, you know, 9 out of 10, 99 out of 100, the thing that my team and I are discussing with the person is, hey, you need to build some more muscle.
Yeah.
You know, the curve on their chart is, and a lot of them are what I would say, from an appearance perspective, very fit.
Yep.
And I think they're kind of what we call like skinny fat, right? Yep. They're the marathon runner, super lean.
Yeah.
They look great, but I'm like, you're losing the benefit of not having some more muscle on your body.
Well, you look at resting metabolic rate. That's the number one contributor to the amount of calories we utilize. Just how, when we're idling at a stop sign, if we're a car, if we're sitting here, we're idling, how much fuel do we use just idling? 2/3 of the variation between individuals, you know, they attribute 2/3 of that variation because you're burning different than I'm burning. 2/3 of that is just plain due to how much lean muscle you carry. So if you want to burn more calories, hey, aerobic is the magic bullet for your health. Resistance training is the fountain of youth. You know, that's where they kind of fit in. Aerobic is amazing and it's great. But if that's all you do, we still osteoporosis, osteopenia, lean muscle wasting. You can actually have a progressively higher and higher body fat. That's why a lot of people, and you probably experienced this, they're looking in the mirror, they're like, oh, I look thin. And they find out their body fat and it's an affront.
Yeah.
I've had men walk out of a program, like literally walk out of a program because they couldn't believe it. They're like, you know, your stuff is off. It's like, well, no, you don't.
Yeah.
You don't do the part of it that does it. So from an overall health standpoint, it's a very important thing to the resistance training is so important.
Yeah. So, yeah, thank you for that. I mean, I always try to convey to people like, well, yeah, you need to do strength training, but do everything.
Yeah.
Do yoga. Go for a run. Go for a swim.
Yeah.
Hop on your Peloton.
Yeah.
Take a class.
Yep.
Do Orange Theory. Whatever it is.
Just but move.
Slow down.
Yeah.
Lift a little heavier, maybe. Yep.
Well, in all those classes, I mean, there's no... None of them are inherent. It's just the matter of people understanding the importance of, you know, it is worth it to slow down a little bit and to get stronger. Just figure out how to get stronger. And it doesn't mean that you have to be a power lifter. It doesn't mean you have to lift tons of weight. But if I can do 25 push-ups, if I did 25 push-ups 5 years ago, and I can only do 25 push-ups right now, what does that mean for all the time and energy I've invested?
Yeah.
I mean, granted, I'm exercising again, but man, in the same amount of time, I could have made some pretty big changes.
Yeah.
And I think there is the discussion of how important is that? I mean, we know we have the science of it. So you and I are going to be like, hey, you literally can change how you move and your bone density and all this. As long as people are moving, I think you're going to transform your life. But there is that percentage of people who want to see the results. They want to see the number.
Yeah.
For them, if you're not resistance training and making that part of, like, you have goals, like, oh, I want my mile time to be this. Oh, you get your aerobic goals. If you don't have goals as to, well, I want to be able to do 50 push-ups, or I want to be able to squat my body weight, or whatever it is. If you don't have goals like that, but you do have goals for your body fat or your, you know, your body or anything like that, it's a disconnect.
Yeah.
If you're someone who just struggles to exercise, do anything.
Yeah.
Get out, move your body, and you are going to transform your life outrageously.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we kind of talked about a little bit with the devices and all of that, but I think, you know, the other thing is you can get way too fixated.
Oh,
on the numbers.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't know about you, but like there's days I go to the gym, I just don't have it.
Yep.
Like I just don't have it.
Yeah.
And do I quit and go home? No, I do what I can, the best that I can, but maybe I didn't get to that goal in the bench press or the deadlift or whatever it may be. And so,
but such is life.
Yeah.
I mean, it's anything you do. And again, that brings it back to energy and intention. You don't have to set world records every day, but life is so much more fun if you have intention towards just one tiny little thing. I'm going to get 0.5% better today. That's why I hate this notion of you're perfect the way you are. Well, then life is going to be really boring. Thank God I'm not perfect and neither are you. And that is one of the greatest blessings we will ever have because it makes life interesting. I can be a better friend tomorrow. By the end of the day, I could do something that makes me a better friend. I could be a better son. I could be more fit. I could be more compassionate. I could, how exciting is that? If I just am like, nope, I'm perfect. So I'm just going to sit in atrophy till the end of my life.
Yeah.
It's insane to me.
Yeah. Well, you know, gosh, you and I could go on forever. I want to be conscious of your time here. You know, before we wrap up, any surprises either that you personally got out of writing the book or anybody shared with you who's read the book?
Yeah, I mean, it's all different perspectives. A lot of people have reached out, particularly widows and people in the throes of grief. And this goes for anyone. This isn't just me that wrote a book.
Right.
And but anyone, when you share something with other human beings, you have no idea how much that helps them. You never know what that can do. And some of the stories that these people have shared with me, just the perspectives they gotten from the book, and that changed their relationship with their spouse, or I did not think, you know, it's like, I wanted to have an impact, but it's like, I didn't know that. And so you never know. And I think that's a great lesson for all of us is to share your art. Seth Godin, who is a marketer, but he's one of my favorite writers. He's unbelievable. And he always says, share your art. And that just means everyone's got something they can do that probably other people, you can do it better or you can do it. You're more passionate about it. Share that with people and you have no idea. So that did surprise me.
Awesome.
Just some of the how the insight impacted people, but also just the mechanics of it. Like I had a book launch party and I went to order my books and they're like, yeah, your first print's going to be a month. I'd already publicized my launch party like an idiot. So I had to pull back my launch party. So there were some things like that I learned and about the editing process and all those, but and those were little surprises, but really when it comes to the content, those are the ones that hit me and it was really impactful.
Wow. Well, thanks for sharing. Congratulations. You know, where can people find more info?
Yeah, so I'm on all the social platforms.
Okay.
At BKlika, K-L-I-K-A on Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn as Brett Klika. YouTube is Energy 100 with Brett Klika, but if you just go to Brett Klika, you're going to find it. Facebook, same thing. Linktree, just Linktree/BeClick, and it shows you all my stuff. Podcast is going to be launching in May. Here it's 2026, so you'll have access to that on all the platforms. I have an opportunity to interview a lot of these experts I've gotten to work with, but also bringing some of my clients on. We're going to talk through that process of their change.
Nice.
And then I shared just some science and perspectives that have really helped shape how I'm able to help people. So that's all coming up. And I speak with organizations. And if you want me to speak for your organization, just there's ways to get a hold of me through Linktree and through my websites and everything as well.
I highly recommend that for those listening. And I think my favorite Brett Klicka moment was bumping into you running the stairs at the convention center in San Diego.
On Saturdays, if I'm in town, I like to go down to the waterfront with the convention center, these big stairs. And I was just running. I'm like, wait a minute, there's somebody else running. I know that guy. And it was you. That's crazy.
And you know, what I love so much about bumping into you there, and I know that's been a part of your routine in your life for a long time, is, you know, somebody like you who's got access to all the research, great workout equipment, mountain biking, all the cool things, and you're running the stairs.
Yeah.
Like, and that's why I was doing it. I'm like, yep. I don't want to think about anything. I want to do something simple that I know is good for me. And then when I saw you, you like validated my thinking. I'm like, nice. Yes, if Brett's doing it, I'm in the right place.
Well, it's free. It's on the water. Oh, you know, where we were running, I think I told you this, but the Symphony, there's the Shell.
Yeah.
The Symphony will like warm up in the morning for their show in the evening. So you're running to Flight of the Valkyrie. You're running up the stairs. And it's just a special thing. It's been part of my repertoire since I moved to San Diego, really. 26 years now.
Super cool.
Yeah.
There's the answer. Hit the stairs, get outside.
That's
listen
right.
Listen to the symphony. That's well, thank right. you so much for your time. It's been an honor and a pleasure. And again, just thank you for sharing your story. You know, we know it's helping people, and I know you know it as well. But again, just so grateful to have you, and look forward to continue to working with you for a long time to come.
Thank you, Andy.
All right. All right, everybody. We will catch you next time. That's Brett Klicka. Catch you soon. Bye-bye.